When you look at every single Marian apparition since the first ones in the early part of the church, you could say that there are at least 12 major apparitions, and when you look at the themes and the ways that they connect with history, it's various. We begin with things with Our Lady of Pilar, where she appeared to one of the apostles, and it wasn't even technically an apparition, she was bilocating. Then we move on to what's known as the Marian era, with Our Lady of Guadalupe, Miraculous Medal, Lourdes, with Fatima, and we see these different themes of this particular devotional item, or healing water, or a call to conversion, which is probably the most prevalent theme in all of the Marian apparitions. But out of all of those Marian apparitions, there is one that is connected to purgatory, and it is one of the least known apparitions. We're going to get into that in today's video. I'm going to tell you its story. We're going to talk about the miracles of healings that happened there, and you will see the power of Knock. If you would like to support this channel in any way, please do so through Buy Me a Coffee. Let's get right into it. On the rainy evening of August 21st, 1879, the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared before the gable wall of the parish church in the little hamlet of Knock. She appeared with St. Joseph to her right and St. John the Evangelist to her left. Beside them was an altar on which stood a cross and a lamb being adored by angels. The apparition lasted for a full 2 hours. Though it was raining, the ground beneath the vision was dry. A light was emanating from the heavenly figures that was witnessed by a farmer about half a mile away from the scene. Upwards of 30 villagers beheld the sight and prayed the rosary together. Oddly, the most famous figure associated with the Knock apparition was not among the witnesses to the heavenly vision. This was the parish priest, Archdeacon Bartholomew Cavanaugh. It is now a commonly accepted pious belief that heaven favored the parish of Knock with this vision because of the holiness of its priest. Father Cavanaugh was known for his deep devotion to the Blessed Virgin and the holy souls in purgatory. For his penances, he wore a hair shirt, and for living very simply. He was told about the vision before the gable wall of his church, but chose not to join his parishioners outside. This has sometimes been attributed either to a miscommunication or his doubtfulness. He later said that not witnessing the apparition has been to me a cause of the deepest mortification, but I console myself with the reflection that it was the will of God that the apparition should be shown to the people, not the priest. Even still, the pious belief in Knock today is that Father Cavanaugh was frequently favored with visits from Our Lady in his own little cottage, and so knew well what was occurring but chose to leave the heavenly vision to be for the sole benefit of his flock. Indeed, many other miraculous manifestations surrounding him were reported, but he always requested those who observed them to speak of them to no one. Father Cavanaugh was immensely devoted to the holy souls. He always saw this devotion as inseparable from his fervent devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary, as she is the mother of her children, but above all her suffering children. Mary is a refuge of sinners here on earth, and she is also the helpers of the souls in purgatory. Some months before the apparition at Knock, Father Cavanaugh began a special movement of prayer in his parish for the souls in purgatory. The poverty of the parishioners of Knock deprived him of the temporal help the payment of stipends for mass intentions provides most priests. As a result, he decided to use a lack of intentions for mass at his parish most productively. Father Cavanaugh resolved to offer 100 consecutive masses for the repose of the souls in purgatory that the Blessed Mother most wanted released into the glory of heaven. These mass intentions were especially warranted. The great famine struck Ireland between 1845 and 1849 and left a massive loss of life in its wake. The last waves of the famine continued up until the time of the astonishing event that took place in Knock in 1879. It was proximately caused by potato blight, was worsened by the repression imposed by the occupying Protestant English government, resulting in the deaths of 1 million, while another million were forced to emigrate, reducing the island nation's population by a quarter. It was in the midst of this struggle and sorrow that Father Cavanaugh offered his 100 consecutive masses for those of the faithful departed Our Lady most wanted delivered from purgatory. Very shortly after this devotion was complete, the heavenly vision before the gable wall of the church at Knock occurred. Unlike at Fatima, Our Lady gave no spoken message to the seers of Knock. She did not call for more acts of penance. the people of Ireland had seemingly done enough. In their poverty, hunger, and oppression, the Irish people were living penance. The message of Fatima makes clear that no suffering should ever be wasted. The suffering of the Irish in the 19th century certainly was not. These devout Catholic souls knew well that they must, in prayer, place themselves in union with Christ's own suffering on the cross. This offering of their sufferings and prayers at Mass for the souls in purgatory was answered in the vision outside of their parish church. Sometimes a message is too great for words. On that evening in Knock, heaven's greatest saints were out in the rain with the people. This was an unspoken message of love and solidarity with the persevering, faithful Irish in their time of suffering and sorrow. It was a light in the midst of darkness. This unfortunately little-known apparition wasn't even known well enough in its own home country of Ireland. Early on, people would flock and they would hear about it, but there were no major means of communication, and especially Ireland was a very poor country. It wasn't until some years later when Judy Coyne decided to put the story together to spread its message and to begin bringing pilgrimages from all over the world. At that time, people were going to Lourdes, they were going to Fatima, they were going to places that were more well established. Now, praise be to God, they have a new basilica and there are more and more pilgrimages there every day. This is not only a place of prayer and a place of peace and a place to remind us of the immense change that prayer for the souls in purgatory can have in our country, it's also a place of tremendous miracles. Now I want to share with you the first officially recorded cure that happened in the early 1920s from the Shrine of Knock. Back home, her condition worsened rapidly, and she was soon admitted to St. Vincent's Hospital in Dublin, where the American diagnosis was confirmed. There she was given a new plaster jacket, but it proved to be no help either. She then went to yet another specialist who this time took her into Bagot Street Hospital, where a stronger type of support was prescribed, but to no avail. She was then taken home to Castellaria, where very soon and in great pain, she was confined to bed, lying on hard boards most of the time. It was a hopeless situation. Kathleen's mother was getting old. They were small farmers, which meant that there were few comforts, and so she suffered greatly. As the 15th of August, the main feast day at Knock, drew near in 1925, Kathleen asked her brother Dominic if he would take her to Knock on that day. It was a big thing to ask, as he had no means of transport and a hired car would cost a great deal. However, after much heart-searching, he agreed. When the day came, Kathleen was too ill to travel, but on the 16th, she was feeling slightly stronger, so they set out. Having arrived at Knock, she lay in great pain and unable to move then, halfway through Mass, she became very ill. At that point, Dominic realized that there was little he could do but return home with, as he thought, his dying sister. All that night, she was near to death until at last, in the early hours of the morning, she fell asleep. Her mother, who had sat with her through the long night, had expected her death at every moment. Early next morning, Dominic, fearing that a funeral was imminent, and knowing very well that there was little in the house to pay for it or for any other necessities, set out with his bonhems to Castellaria market to sell them. At midday, Kathleen awoke and she was extremely uncomfortable and her jacket was causing her great pain. Unable to bear it any longer, she felt an urge to get up, and as soon as she made a move to do so, she was forced by the pain to stand erect. At that moment, she discovered that she could use her limbs and that the agonizing pain had left her. She ran to the kitchen where her exhausted mother had been to doze by the fire. Waking at once when Kathleen entered, and now terrified that she was about to witness her death, she hardly heard as Kathleen told her that she was cured. She watched as she ran out of the house and into the adjoining field, where to her utter dismay, she saw her swing the stick she had been holding several times in an arc around her head and fling it as far as possible into the distance. She came back into the house and proceeded to dress, this time with any assistance, announcing to her mother that she was going there and then to tell the priest, who also had been expecting news of her death. And without further delay, she walked off quickly down the road. Somewhere along the way, Dominic returned from the market, saw the sprightly young girl walking quickly towards him. Not recognize her, he thought how like his sister she looked in the years when that sister was well. She greeted him cheerfully, and with great difficulty she managed to convince him that she was in fact Kathleen and that she had been cured. She told us about all the excitement that followed and the joy of everybody around her, that she was well again. The following Sunday, she returned to knock to give thanks and to place her plaster jacket inside the railings of the church at the gable, a common practice in those days.